Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. Before we jump into this conversation, I want to remind you that WEAA is in need of volunteers for our upcoming spring membership drive. Really important. April 9th through the 17th. If you have a few hours to volunteer, the Mark Steiner Show, for Gospel Grace, for Anthony McCarthy's show, for Bass Who Comes On Before Me, whatever show it is that you love and want to be part of, you need to volunteer and be part of your public radio, WEAA. They have been cutting, they want to cut it to the bone on Capitol Hill, and we need you to help put the meat back on the bone and be part. Not to bring your money, just bring yourselves. And be part of the crew that answers the phones and enjoys the afternoon or evening to doing our spring drive April 9th through 17th. The membership department's number is 443-885-2075. That's 443-885-2075. Come enjoy yourself and be a volunteer during our spring membership drive. Once a month, Leah Gilmore comes in the studio. Sounds like you were here just last week. I don't know.
We were just hanging out a couple days ago. That's what it was.
Leah Gilmore, of course, is our Center for Emerging Media's cultural correspondent. She's founder and director of Emoja Musica, an international music and human rights organization chosen by Essence Magazine as one of 25 women shaping the world, and has conducted musical and vocal workshops at international and American schools across Europe and trained many classical European choirs to sing from the soul, teaching gospel music. Right. And we'll talk about what she intends for today's show in a moment, including also Donald Hicken, who is the theater department head at Baltimore School for the Arts and is a major figure in theater and the arts in our community and has been for the last 30-odd years. And just,
Odd is right.
And disclaimer, he's a friend and a colleague as well. Coley Tangela is here. Coley teaches theater arts and acting at Collington Square Elementary and Middle School in Baltimore, a 2011 OSI fellow, a comedian, also, I will disclaimer, a friend and former student, which makes me really old.
He's only 19, maybe.
Yeah. Oh, please, I wish.
Yeah, me
Mark,
too.
Yeah, thank me. I would like to thank you for letting me be a part of this conversation. And also got a little correction here. I'm a 2010 OSI fellow. They just started receiving the new applications for 2011.
2010, gotcha.
Yeah.
410-319-8888 is the number here. And Lee and I had a conversation a few weeks back about what we really wanted to get into. And Lee was telling me about the work she wants to do with young people in the city here and vocal training. We started talking about the need of arts and music in our schools. And Leah said, Leah, why don't you kind of give an essence of what it is that drew you passionately to this discussion today?
Well, you know, if you put the arts, I'm passionately there, period. I think, you know, we were looking at, you know, what's been happening in Congress, federally, about, you know, taking away funds, not just the state of Maryland, but across the board. And the National Endowment for the Arts has a potential to be gutted. And the kids that hurt the most from this are the kids who don't have the biggest access to the arts. And when I look at people like Coley and Donald, who are doing the, you know, God's work, whatever God you would like to fill in the blank with that, and who really know the importance of the arts, I was just so excited. And for me, it saved me. You know, I started here at Winston Middle School, and I was absolutely terrible in home economics. And so I made an apron upside down. This is how I found out I had musical ability. And I said, can I do something other than make this apron? They said, well, you could take music class. So in middle school, a public middle school, I learned to play clarinet, flute, xylophone, and violin. And this is, you know, low many, many years ago.
Not that many.
So, yeah, that many. So I really wanted to take the opportunity to really, you know, talk about the importance of the arts for our children's education, especially here in Baltimore City.
And Donald, I know you and I have had this discussion many, many times over the years. Mm-hmm. And it's one of your passions as well, right, beyond School for the Arts. And you always used to, whenever I hear you have a discussion, you launch into this conversation about if I have it right, the three-legged stool, the
right.
Three legs of a stool.
Right, right. Well, I sometimes use that.
You can do whatever you want. I'm not
sure. Three-legged stool, or to me, it's a triangle.
A triangle, you know, right?
An equilateral triangle. To me, the correct balance in education is academics, creativity, and fitness. And if we had an equal measure of those things, then I think you've got a very whole human picture there for how young people develop. And I think the biggest crisis we have with the loss of arts in the schools is not the standpoint of, you know, they're not being exposed to great music, or they're not being exposed to the, you know, the arts. They don't know how to appreciate the arts. It's not really about art as a noun. It's really about art as a verb. You know, it's a process. Unlocking creative imagination, strengthening creative imagination, to me, is not a frill. It's not something you cut from a budget. It's something you make an essential part of a budget. You've got to have these kids involved in using and developing and strengthening their creative imagination, because it finds its way into everything else that they do. We've seen it over and over again at Baltimore School for the Arts. Kids who come into us, into our program, without adequate academic preparation, but because they're involved in a creative process, because they're using their imaginations and they're strengthening their imaginations on a daily basis, that filters over into their academic work. And we see kids who are very poorly prepared suddenly beginning to excel academically. And it, sure, it's because they're getting a lot of attention, but it's also because the right buttons are being pushed, the right strengths are being developed.
Right,
and imagination is a muscle. I really believe it. I don't know if this is, you know, scientifically provable, but I think it is a muscle, because I think the more you use it, the stronger it gets. And if you don't use it, it atrophies like any muscle.
And well, didn't Einstein say that imagination, if you don't have that, a part of you dies?
That's right. That's so absolutely right.
Coley, I mean, this is you as a young man. I remember you grew up in Park Circle,
mm-hmm.
which is a poor working class neighborhood in Baltimore on the west side of town.
Yeah, and proud of it.
And proud of it, and you should be. But you kind of went against the grain as a kid and became an artist very young. You knew you had something, you had to express it. It wasn't always easy for somebody in that position to express it in that period on those streets, but you did. So it's become a foundation for you. It's what fueled you to get to the other side in certain respects.
Oh, yeah, it did. I have no issue with talking about the challenges that I've had in my youth that have made me into the man that I am presently. And as you know, and I'll share candidly, I grew up in a home that was very loving but tormented by a lot of the economic and urban demons that affect a lot of people transcending race and gender, but particularly of the African American community at that time. My mother raised me alone. I had a distant relationship with my father, who struggled with the demon of alcoholism, who was a brilliant man, but struggled with that. And then dealing with physical abuse by a member of my family, with also issues of sexual abuse, finding out later that the reason why the member of my family physically abused and molested me was because of a breaking the norm or the stereotype of female member of their family. Mm. But I, with no hesitation, tell everyone that the arts, theater, acting, writing, music, and reclaiming African culture saved my life. And that's how I met you, Mark Steiner, years ago. You know, not saying anything untrue, but the circle of people who are doing things to uplift humanity is a small circle. There is no accident that I started out working with you in a youth theater program, working with marginalized, disenfranchised young people and performing throughout communities throughout the state of Maryland, becoming Open Society Institute Baltimore Fellow, developing a traveling youth theater troupe, but also using the component of filmmaking to do that. And in my journey, meeting Mr. Hickens here, who was a teacher of mine when, as a young person, every Saturday for a year for 4 hours, taking master classes with this gentleman, exploring all aspects of theater, getting a taste of Shakespeare, getting a taste of Fugard, the whole entire spectrum at the age, I think it was like 14, 15 years old, and studying method acting, Stanislavski, at that age, and then getting on the bus, traveling back up into Lower Park Heights, getting off the bus, and then dealing with those issues there. But then people getting intrigued when I first got a little bit of publicity and I popped up in a TV commercial, popped up in newspaper articles. I was not, you know, wasn't teased anymore until the community decided to kind of shelter me from it, and I wasn't harassed. They said, let him go. He's doing his little acting thing. But then I was bringing some positive notoriety to the community, And then the individuals who would look at me as possibly prey look at me as an individual to say he gets a pass to see if he can make it to the other side. So I'm saying that as we look at the arts in schools, we have to look at it as something that can save a human being's life.
That's right.
And with the young youth troupe that I work with twice a week in East Baltimore right now, the chant that we do is to remember, my performance could help save somebody's life. And we begin that before we start rehearsals, and to keep that in the forefront of their mind.
Folks, join us here at 410-319-8888. Think about your own lives. Think about the schools you go to, where your children go to school, about the arts in your life, and about the role that arts plays in, does or does not play, or should or should not play in the lives of students. Some people think that it's what we need to do is what we're doing, which is all straight academics, reading and mathematics. That's the extent of education. That's not true, because I think things are turning around in Baltimore City schools. But that was the philosophy of what we had to do, and that it was an add-on. Music and art were an add-on. Theater was an add-on. Mm-hmm. It was an extracurricular activity. It's an after-school program. It's not something that's integral to the process. And I said that's in some ways, Donald, the hardest thing to get people to wrestle with and kind of put on the table.
It is.
Because the arts is like that other. It's not seen as important as learning calculus.
Well, it's very tricky in a way, because I think that one of the things that art doesn't do systemically is be inherently competitive. The arts are inherently cooperative and collective in nature. It's a self-exploration. It's a self-revelation. You don't keep score. I used to think we'd get more people in the theater if we could just hang a score clock over the over the audience, you know, just every once in a while run up some numbers. Yeah.
Right.
And we've done to the arts in our culture, in our country, is we have sort of turned it into a commodity. We have this sort of celebrity industrial complex where art is measured in dollars and measured in success that way. And I'm afraid that quantifying things, I think it's even bad for academic pursuits, but we score everything. It's all about keeping score. It's all about getting a score. It's all about measuring up to a number and achieving a number. And those are not impossible goals. I'm just saying that, and that's not a bad thing necessarily. It just needs to be counterbalanced with something else that is inherently non-competitive and self-exploratory and cooperative and collective in nature. Mm-hmm. I think that once kids find that process in themselves, it becomes a path for self-discovery. You know, as you were saying, you found yourself, you saved yourself through the arts. And I think I've seen that happen so many kids over the 30 years I've been at the School for the Arts. Time and time again, we see it happen because there's a process of self-discovery that goes along with this creativity, and that's essential. I believe that self-esteem is a function of the imagination. Yes. I don't have any proof for that, but I think in order to see possibilities for yourself, in order to imagine a future for yourself, you need to have an active imagination. In order to empathize with other people, to see other human beings in their entirety, takes imagination. It's not something you pick up automatically if you're in a competitive environment, if you're seeing the world as winners and losers. You don't want to be a loser. You want to be a winner. And we tend to break things down that way, and it sets up a lot of animosity and a lot of competitive instinct between and among people. If you look at the people that are doing the bullying in schools, they're jocks for the most part. And I'm going to get in trouble for saying this.
You were a jock in your day as well.
I was a jock, and I know that culture. I know that locker room culture, and I know it. There's a lot of bullying, and there's a lot of intimidation that goes with that culture. I'm not saying it's a bad thing in itself. It just needs counterbalance. You know, when I was in high school and I was a football player, I discovered the theater, and when I started to participate in the theater, I was shunned by the people in that jock culture, the athletic culture. I lost a whole set of friends and acquired a whole new set of friends when I joined the Thespian Society in high school. But for me, I finally found out what I was, who I was, and what I was going to do with my life.
And it's that balance. One of the things I'm going to open the phones early today because people are calling in. I want to get them part of this conversation. 410-319-8888 because we'll talk a little bit later about arts integration, which is taking over many school systems now, even the state of Maryland, where arts are infused in every piece of curriculum, what that means for change, what it does to change a culture and mindset and how powerful it is, and why it's not just an add-on. And what do you think? Maybe you think it should just be an add-on. I don't know. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Leah Gilmore, her time of the month to be with us. It's always wonderful to have her in the studio.
I'm thrilled to be here.
Donald Hicken, Coley Tangela, and Carla, you're on the air.
How are you?
Well, hi, Carla.
Welcome.
How are you?
I'm great. I am so happy to be able to participate in this conversation as an individual who participates in the arts. And I know that when I don't have the arts in my life, I feel a little bit off balance, because for me, it's also spiritual in addition to being physical and intellectual and stretching my imagination. As a writer, as a dancer, as someone who sings with a choir, I feel that it's really, really critical, and that our children do need it. As someone who was exposed to music, took piano lessons as a child, even though I hated it.
Been there, Carla.
And now regret that I don't know how to play, because I can't read notes anymore. And also my older sister, who for her 50th year, she decided for her birthday that she was going to take acting classes.
Wonderful.
And so I really think that the arts is something that is critical. And I believe that if there were more arts and physical education infused in the schools, that there would be a lot less violence on the street. And I'll take your responses off the air. Thank you.
I think it's excellent. I think Carla hit the nail on the head. This is something that is critical, and it's not a luxury. I mean, often culturally we think of arts as a luxury, something that is tangentially related to everything else. But the arts is a necessity. The wonderful thing about the arts is no matter what country you go to, no matter what language anyone is speaking, you don't have to understand the language to understand the power of a song. It can be in anything, or a dance. If you see Martha Graham or Alvin Ailey, you don't need to be fluent in English to understand what they're putting forth. This is what we teach our kids when they learn the arts. And it's not just in our schools. It's those after-school programs as well. While I was attending Morgan State, yay, proud Morgan graduate, I taught for 6 years for the Recreation and Parks. And I taught kids whose parents were in jail, who were drug addicts. Maybe the only time they ate is when they came to this three-hour program. But these kids sang in a little choir that we created. And I got a letter from a kid about 2 years ago who said, thank you. And it's not about me. This is about what they were doing. Thank you. I went to law school instead of selling drugs. And I thought, this was all because you sang in a choir. But what it did was exactly what Donald said. It creates self-esteem. It's empowering. It's empowering to do something. It's empowering to create. It is as empowering to create a play, to see yourself on film, I don't want to see myself on film, as it is to finish that algebra homework, if not more.
It does balance. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the balance that has to exist.
That's the balance.
And I was thinking, Coley, I mean, the kids that were in our theater company when you were in it, Family mm-hmm. Circle Theater, back in the late 70s, early 80s.
That's right. That's right.
Almost everyone, not just because of the company, but because people got a taste of the arts, not one of those young people ended up in prison.
That's right. Not.
Two became cops.
Mm-hmm.
Two went to stage.
Yeah. Professionally performing, went on to pursue, working on an MFA in dance at this time, who we started with years ago. I just want to add on to what Donald was sharing about the arts being non-competitive. I don't mind it being competitive. I don't mind it, but we have to switch the paradigm. Not competitive in the sense of measuring it quantitatively as in terms of the intellectual and scholarly ability, but competitive in, this changed the paradigm. Can academics infused with the arts make you a better human being? Who can be the more compassionate? Who can be more the creative in looking at solutions to our crisis on this planet? Let's be competitive in terms of like trying to resolve hunger, racism, sexism, homophobia, misogyny, and all that. Let's be competitive in that direction. Let's flip that paradigm because, you know, it'd be great to have a like American Idol, Dancing with the Stars for Humanity, where everybody comes together. Well, we have genocide in this country.
Okay.
We have a plague over here.
All of you, for
the next 4 weeks, you have to come up with a cure and a resolution nobody dies, everybody feels affirmed, and there will be a continued peace. Now go. And then you win $1 million.
There you go.
That's the kind of paradigm I would like to see. You know, in terms of, and the arts can do that. Also, I want to share with you that I just left doing a half-hour detention with a young man. And I got to give a shout-out to my school because I forget to do that. There are some serious educators in the trenches every day dealing with our children who come with such horrific experiences. And once you get to know their personal story, whether through a counselor or through a crisis situation, you are utterly amazed that they even get in the door every day. And a wonderful teacher taught me a long time ago that you can dislike the child's behavior, but don't ever find yourself disliking a particular child because every day is an opportunity and a new day. And I just saw a young man who would barrage me. I'm African-American. He's African-American. I come there every day. Last year, I got a perfect attendance award. And so I'm there every day trying to share my best with him. He would barrage me with profanity and insults, even using the N-word towards me. And I began to see him one-on-one in the half-hour detentions that I gave to prevent him from being suspended for his behavior, a different child, a different human being. And to the point, he shows up and waits for me in the office after I finish my last theater class and waits for me to begin his detention. And he has a Saturday detention coming up with me this weekend. But I began to see him in a different light because we're sitting there with a timer looking at each other. I began to see the beautiful child in him and his brilliance. And then the fact when he gets up and leaves that, again, I want to apologize, Mr. Tingala, for what I've been doing. And, yeah, I'll see you for the next detention. Very humbly and sweet, as opposed to the vile child that fits into stereotypes of African-American boys. So detention, I believe a good teacher with detention, quality detention, be able to view your child in a different light and form a relationship, you know, with a child or with any human being, an adult, is beautiful. Like the woman just mentioned, somebody in their 50s decided to take a theater class. They learned that your life every day is a new beginning.
That's right.
And the arts can do that. So let's flip that paradigm and make it an embracing of the greatness that we can all reach as human beings.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about the arts, the power of arts in our schools, how to make them an integral part of our curriculum, should they be. Your thoughts, 410-319-8888. Bernice, you're on the air.
Everyone.
Good evening.
Hi, Bernice.
I've been listening very intently. Actually, I'm sitting outside my house in the car. We didn't even want to miss anything because I have a couple of things to say. I'm probably also a Morgan grad.
Oh, wonderful, Bernice.
Not only was I graduated from Morgan, I sang on the choir.
Oh, I did too.
And I have a history of being in choirs from Paul Brent, who happened to be the first African-American, I believe, who was admitted into one of the vocal programs at Peabody. And I studied with Margaret Lindsay and, of course, Dr. Nathan Carter. They're not with us anymore. But my point was that being able to keep arts in the school can do two things. When I see young people on the streets, especially young men, I always think, if they were in music, if they were in band, drama, whatever it is, perhaps they would not be on that street corner. And statistically, young women who are involved in after-school programs do not fall prey to teen pregnancy at a greater rate because the hours when that happens is between 2 and 5 p.m. Unsupervised. They could be just phenomenal young people if their energy was redirected. The first thing that I think of also is that every student is not academically as strong as the next student, but there are students that can excel in the arts if they're given the opportunity. So that academic competitiveness that you talked about as well is not just on the football field. There are students that will really flourish and blossom with the arts in their lives, whether it's choir, whether it's dance, whether it's theater. And I think that it definitely should be included, not as an add-on, but keep it in the curriculum, keep it vibrant, keep it moving. I'm just finding out that Coppin State University has a dance program. Baltimore needs to know that. And those are the things that that dance program is only about 5 or 6 years old. Those are the things that we need to continue to support in our communities. And I always, always support the arts.
Bernice, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Bernice.
Being a part of this. Dom?
Yeah, well, I was just going to say it's so important that parents insist on this. I think that if the parents ask for it, if they demand it, if they say, right, we need this for our children, the school system is going to respond. And I don't care where you are in the world. If the parents step up and say, there's something missing and we want it back, and we want it back well done and in a very comprehensive way, then I think the school system will respond,
right,
and put it back in the curriculum.
And I think there's even times, though, when unfortunately some parents can't step up. So we need to be proactive in making sure the community needs to understand the importance of the arts. And we should be extremely proactive in just insisting that the arts become a real and consistent part of the curriculum.
Mm-hmm. We're going to a very brief break here in just a minute. And Jennifer, you're the next caller up from Dundalk. We're going to come to your call when we return. We are talking about the power and role of arts in our schools. Baltimore is trying to move in that direction. We'll talk more about what Baltimore City Schools are doing, what happens in School for the Arts, and how you expand that energy that I think is in School for the Arts out to the rest of the schools in this city. We are here with Donald Hicken, who's the theater department head at Baltimore School for the Arts. Of course, Leah Gilmore, she's here every month, our Center for Emerging Media's cultural correspondent, Colleton Gala, 2010 OSI Fellow. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Stay with us. We'll be back. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back. And the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Estate Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. This is our monthly visit from Leah Gilmore. She is a Center for Emerging Media's cultural correspondent, founder and director of Emoja Musica, an international music and human rights organization. Chose by Essence Magazine as one of the 25 women shaping the world, and has conducted music and vocal workshops at international and American schools and across Europe, and trained many classical European choirs to sing from the soul, teaching gospel music.
I have to write you a check for all that.
I'll take it. That's a kid. Donald Hicken is the founder, but you might as well have been the founder of the theater.
Might as well
the director,
really,
of the theater department of Baltimore School for the Arts since its inception, and a leading figure in the arts and culture in Baltimore. Directs incredible plays at Everyman Theater. Was former artistic director of the Columbia Festival for years as well. And is one of the passionate advocates for arts in our school curriculums and with our children. Colleton Gala teaches theater arts and acting at Collinson Square Elementary and Middle Schools in Baltimore. Is a 2010 OSI Fellow and a working comedian on top of that. 410-319-8888.
Comedians always make me nervous.
Yes, 410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. Let me go to the phones first, then we're going to kind of talk a bit about arts integration. Jennifer in Dundalk, you're on the air.
Hello, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
Jennifer.
My family and I are new to the Baltimore area. So when we moved here 3 years ago, I had an 8-year-old daughter, and I decided to get her accustomed to her new community through the arts. I had her audition for Peabody Institute's Children's Choir. She placed, and now she's singing 3 years later. She's now singing with the Handel's Children's Choir of Baltimore. I have found that the music programs here in Baltimore County to be very poor. So I'm really glad that I, took that route to expose her to those type of music programs. And it has helped her self-esteem. It's helped her learn the city. It's given her a new grounding. I always knew she was talented, but when she began that training, this new person, when the conductor says action, this other person comes out that, I never knew was in there. It's this little girl that gets very professional and really pours out her soul. But what's really, as far as the arts helping to grow and nurture a child, us being new to Baltimore, she started seeing the different festivals that were happening here in Baltimore and decided, as an African-American child, she wanted to compete in the Miss Hun Fest. She won. She won.
Miss Hun?
Wow. Congratulations.
The times, they are changing.
Oh, honey. You're new to this area, but let me tell you, that's deep.
That's deep.
That's deep, and that's impressive.
Yeah, but you know what? It's,
power to the bouffant.
But you know what? The thing is that it's like the whole movie Hairspray is acting out because people don't really realize that movie was about the integration of Baltimore.
That's right. Yeah.
Right.
And
that's right.
That when she's 12 years old, she won in her age category. She competed against 16 girls in her bobby socks, not with the beehive, but just a little African-American bob, looking like a bobby sock, or prepared to sing Good Morning Baltimore. And I did not realize until recently, a colleague of mine was in Hamden on the street in one of the boutiques and just said, my co-worker's daughter is Miss Honnette. And they said to her, the little African-American girl? And my co-worker was like, yes. They said the African-Americans working in that shop were running up and down the block that day yelling, a black girl won, Miss Hon.
Well, you know, you have to realize that Hamden, for years, was a neighborhood when I was growing up that if you were black or Jewish, you didn't even go close.
Right. It was no-go zone.
Excuse me. And okay. Thanks to Mark and the theater troupe that I was involved in, several times we performed in that community. And we would have to make our way home by public transportation. So we're performing theater about social justice and integration.
And the thing is, and we live in Dundalk, and My daughter on St. Patrick's Day carried the Dundalk flag in the parade.
That's good for wonderful. You. Good
but
for you.
It's because of the confidence and the development that she has through the arts that she's not scared.
She
can get up in front
that.
Of people.
Right.
You said something earlier that I just want to explore for a minute and turn to Donald and the others on the panel. When you said that you weren't happy with the music programming in Baltimore County Public Schools, just briefly, if you could tell me what you meant by that.
Oh, she went off.
Jennifer's still there?
Mm-hmm. I think she hung up.
Oh.
I think we might have lost her, yeah.
Jennifer, you still there?
But you can answer uh-huh. it.
Well, but,
can you hear me? I'm still here.
Okay, well, just very quickly, what did you mean when you said that you weren't happy with?
There are no instruments. When you go to the performances, it's like, who's teaching this class? Now, granted, I have to say, I grew up in New York. I went to a music and arts high school.
Okay.
So I have a deep appreciation, even though my band director called me a second-rate flutist, but I still gave it my all. But, you know, it's just really poor. There are no instruments, the performances. It's just not there. It just was very disappointing to me. And I wanted her to have that experience because when you learn an instrument, when you're able to sing and read music, it opens up a different part of your brain that makes you a more intelligent, well-rounded person
right.
that can appreciate the beauty in life.
Jennifer, I appreciate being part of this show, and I can hear in the very end, the because and the all, that you are from New York.
Yeah, I just want to mention real quick don't you understand that that's the part of the economic crisis of this country? See, your expectations are really high. You expect teachers to be able to teach music with instruments. That costs money, and they want to take the money out of the arts. Mm-hmm. Next thing you know, you're going to be complaining that teachers are trying to – teachers want books with words in them.
Right. Not from 1955.
Yeah,
right.
You know, that's ridiculous, you know.
literally, I have a teacher that opened a book. This is a music book not too long ago, and she lives in Wisconsin, irony of all states. And just a year ago, she opened a book that referred to African-Americans as Negroes. And she's a music teacher. So we're living in a time where we have taken so much money out of the schools, but there's also about the paradigm shifts that need to happen. Mm-hmm. There's some real change that needs to happen culturally in order to understand how vastly important this is.
When you're in the middle of discussions inside the school system about this issue, mm-hmm. The idea of how you begin a discussion with those in power, the years you've been doing this at School for the Arts, the importance of instruments in middle and elementary school, of the arts, whether it's arts integration, which infuses all the way through all the programs, whether it's arts programs in the school. I mean, this is a difficult debate to make.
Well, it is, and what we have tried to do at School for the Arts is through our TWIGS program, which is our after-school program, which is twice the size of the high school, and it brings in kids from all over the city for wonderful instruction. I mean, we're reaching out into the community as much as we can, But our resources and our time is limited. You know, we have to focus on the kids that we admit to our program, and it's a pre-professional program. It's a conservatory training program. So it's very intense. It's very one-on-one, small classes and private lessons and that kind of work. That's what we do. But we hope to be a model, at least from the standpoint of looking at the fact that we don't look at our kids' academics when we admit them. We admit them solely on the basis of their audition or their portfolio review in visual arts. That's the only thing we look at. We honestly don't know if they can read or write. And we have a 98% college placement. We have virtually a zero dropout rate. And we have some of the highest combined test scores in the city. Now, there's a message in there somewhere about how this work impacts on people who are in any pursuit. And I think part of it is discipline and hard work. You know, they become... They see it in their teachers. There's a living model there because they're being taught by dedicated, hardworking teachers who are not looking at the clock all day, that they're really immersed in this work. They realize that there's a direct correlation between discipline, hard work, and achievement. And it makes the connection for them perfectly in a way that it goes into all those other things we talked about, the creativity, the revelation, the self-discovery, the empathy, all of those things that are important. The kids want to be in school. You know, I have meetings with parents that come in for the first parent conference. And they're going, my kid can't wait to get up in the morning and go to school. You know, it makes the school a wonderful place to be, to have that creative energy explored and the imagination of these kids employed in a way that is nurturing and helps them develop and helps them cope with a lot of the things that they're dealing with outside. I mean, it's a nasty world for these kids, a lot of them. And the other thing that we don't have at School for the Arts, I can tell you, we have kids here at the school over the last 30 years who have had virtually no contact with students of the other race. You know, they come from Baltimore. They come from different communities. They've had very little interaction. We have a very diverse population. They're thrust in there together, white kids, black kids, Asian kids, Hispanic kids. And I can count on the fingers.
All classes.
Kids from private school, kids from very, very poor circumstances. And I can tell you, we don't have violence at the School for the Arts. We don't have it. We don't have bullying at the School for the Arts. Why is that? I think it's because of that engendered empathy.
It's an amazing, amazing place. I mean, really, what has happened for the kids? I was supposed to be in the first graduating class, but I went to Mercy High School. So we shipped in the night and everything. But you know, Donald, what always concerns me at a certain level is that there are so many talented kids who unfortunately didn't make it to the School for the Arts.
Yeah.
Yet they still have a gift of some sort, you know, because you can only admit but so many.
That's right.
What are we doing for those children?
Well, that's the question.
And these are the folks I think we really need. Yeah. And these are the folks I want to focus on.
Sure. This is the underserved constituency.
Right.
These are kids who have a creative energy. They really want this. And the school system is simply letting them down. The school system is just simply failing to provide this, again, an essential service, not an extracurricular activity.
Because we're not just talking about, okay, let's stimulate your right brain. We're also talking about left brain activity.
Yeah.
What is more mathematical than music theory? You know, sitting there and learning absolutely. You know that students, high school students, scored 100% higher on fraction learning when they took music development. Middle school students thrive. My life was saved as well with music because I was a very shy girl. Can you imagine that? It really was true. And, you know, I was a chubby little girl, nothing like today. And the steam that happens, you know, with theater, I did so much theater, you know, being able to become someone else. This is something that sounds, you know, like a luxury, but it's not. Donald's on the point. This is, we need to have it.
And I think the school system, I know that Dr. Alonzo hears this.
He
hears it. And I know they really want to make this happen. And they're doing everything they possibly can with the limited resources that they have. I think it's really just a matter of getting enough energy under this mandate to make it happen, because I've talked with many people in the school system over the years that really they see the value of it. They want to make it happen, but they're constrained to a certain extent by a lot of standardized testing that they have to comply with. There's a lot of that that's come down from
the child and the leaving them behind.
The No Child Left Behind mandate is very limiting in terms of, you know, you'd like to have an arts-infused curriculum, but in a lot of cases they've got to teach to the test. They can't do a lot of innovative stuff in the classroom because they're being measured that way.
But you can make it I don't know, this is Coley Tangela. You can make it happen even in the most entrenched situation. And I mentioned in the break about dealing with the tremendous trauma and negative acting out behavior of a lot of students. Even when you have the resources, having to deal with that pain and having them emotionally process it, and the arts can be used for that, and even academics. But I want to toss something very important out there. And if any teachers who are in the grind of teaching in an urban situation with challenging students can attest to this, call in, is that you have to do extra as a teacher. Mm-hmm. Your salary, I don't care what contract you negotiate, if you're a good teacher and you love your students and you see the importance of them being the future of the world, you're going to do more. And it's beyond your job description. And also, when you're changing the paradigm, you need leaders to do that. I think at our school, I want to give her a mad shout out, you need good administrators that can see the value of the arts linking in with the academics. And we finally got that kind of woman. First year here, but she looks at the school holistically and academically. She's the first person there and the last one to leave. She deals with crisis with children that you would not believe. And right now, folks, if you hear it, call Collington Square School tomorrow. Her name is Etta Johnson, principal of Collington Square, and tell her, girl, keep your head up and be strong because you're doing a good job. And I'm just saying, you have to do more. And if it's not being done, good teachers will go out, learn it themselves, and do it themselves. You don't have to wait for a trained professional in the arts that are sitting at the microphone right now in these studios. You can learn it. Take a class and bring it in. And even adapting a storybook into a play in your classroom, doing free movement can be done, and then linking it. Because one thing I learned when I wanted to teach theater, I had to justify it by proving that theater could buttress mathematics and literature and also help with small group cooperative learning to even get it in there. So I understand that task, but also we need some people who can grab the vision, because right now we have some people in the system, wonderful teachers, but they cannot get with the paradigm shift of doing more and thinking out of the traditional way of doing it into the new tradition that is coming. But the pain of our children is real. We have to learn to deal with that. I have taken on the understanding that I have to be a surrogate parent to our children.
Well, I think that what you're saying is really critical. I think that it's when I was talking again to one of my daughter today, she's going to high school next year, and she said there are all the arts classes are after school. They're not inside the school day. You have to take it as an elective. There's no theater program. And that happens in a lot of schools, and I think that the question is, and I'm curious what our listeners think at 410-319-8888, do we need and how do we get to the place where every student can pick an artistic form to work with in their school? Have it all through elementary, middle school, get to high school, and stay with one or two or whatever you want to do as part of your everyday academic day from 9 to 4 whenever you are in school. Because whether you become a plumber or a doctor, or a bus driver, or whatever it is you are in life, that if you have an art, whether it's playing the drums or working in an amateur theater group or painting a picture or singing in a choir, I mean, it does something to your existence and changes the nature of existence. So what do you think? 410-319-8888. Let's get some callers in here towards the end here. And, Jeff, you're on the air.
You guys kind of stole all my thunder. I got in the car.
I don't think so. Go ahead. Thunder on.
I got in the car, and I heard the topic, and all I could do was start smiling.
Oh, wonderful.
When I was in eighth grade, I was basic hardhead. And I had a teacher that was strong enough and said to me, you're going to pass my class. She gave me an instrument, and she said, you're going to pass my class. And that one brief conversation changed my whole life. Because if I had not, I couldn't hang out because I had to be somewhere. I had practice to be at. I had a performance to be at. I had to be somewhere. And that lasted up through high school into college. So, that whole thing, before there was School of Arts, there was Douglas High School. And Douglas High School's music program was phenomenal. And
it was.
That's true.
What year were you there?
I graduated in 81.
Okay. It was a great, great program.
It was.
Yeah. And it was so phenomenal that it allowed us to go from state to state and travel and do things that totally different than what my counterparts were doing. And it literally saved my life. Literally. Saved my life. I did not have to hang on the corners. I found out by the time I was in the 10th grade that I was pretty good at math.
Uh-huh. There you go.
You know,
thanks, Jeff.
I know by the time I'm a senior, I'm taking calculus going, oh. And my buddy's going, why are you going in that class, man? Hey, that's what, you know. And that's when they were tracking kids, really tracking kids. And they said, this is where you need to go. And I said, oh, man. And my mother said, what's going on with you? I said, hey, music chose me. It chose me.
Jeff, I do appreciate being part of the show. This is really important. And I want to get a few more callers in here before the end, because a lot of people are kind of streaming in now. And I think they have things to tell us about their life in the arts. Yes. And want to hear what they have to say. And David in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. I'm tiptoeing here because I want to make sure I say it the right way, because I was listening to your show, and I totally agree with how music and everything can make an impact. Because when I grew up in Baltimore, we had the cultural arts program, we had Camp Concern, we had stuff that would keep kids off the street. But as I was listening to your show, I mean, my wife's a teacher, and I was just chopping at the bits not to call you because I didn't want to insult anybody on your panel there. But I am so sick of everybody putting everything on a teacher. I mean, it's like, you know, my wife spends her own money, she stays late, yeah, all the above. But she's a counselor. She's a mother. She's a father. She's a person that you have to, you know, be a counselor in the sense of mental kids. So, you know, health department kids. I mean, I know I'm not saying all the things wrong. Again, I don't want to insult anybody there. But it's so sad when smart people like yourself get together. I think everybody at the panel, I've heard the show many a time, you have smart people on. But nobody is saying that the School of the Arts gets a huge, tremendous amount of donation from the corporate community that other schools don't get. You know, and when I hear all that, it's that, you know, we don't say that kind of stuff. We don't say, why isn't the churches, you know, people have the problem with the churches on the corner. You know, New Psalmist built a $100 billion church over there. Why can't they donate $2 or $3 million to one of the schools in the area and say, hey, you know, we'll get together with the music and the arts program?
Amen.
You know, you got Southern Baptists on the east side.
That's a whole nother hour-long show.
Yeah, that's a whole nother hour-long thing. So when I hear you guys talk, we don't even touch on that stuff. It's like, oh, if the teacher
but
would
you know
just
what, David? David, I think that you're actually saying the same thing as Coley about, you know, how the strength of the teacher. Your wife is an excellent teacher, and you're right. There is so much pressure put on our Baltimore City School teachers. Yet, you know, I don't know where many of us would be without the teacher who was the mother, who was the father, who was the nurturer. So I don't think what he's saying is kind of the antithesis of what you're saying. And I think you're right about the funding. I mean, we have to think about the funding. We have to look at how the funding is distributed. Mm-hmm. And we have to look at the private community, the foundation community, can also work with our Baltimore City
school. Yeah, I think a lot of schools in Baltimore City have used the Baltimore School for the Arts model and have partnered mm-hmm. with corporate sponsors and have formed 501c3s, which is what we did early on by creating the Baltimore School for the Arts Foundation, to get additional funding to supplement programs right. that the city cannot provide money for.
I'm actually working now on a program that was funded by a private foundation to look at the feasibility of creating a choir situation for middle school students from Baltimore City. These are not the most talented, but the self-identified kids who want to sing. Not everybody is going to be a debater or a math champ, but maybe I want to sing. So there are foundations out there who are ready and willing to listen.
Yeah, I did say that good teachers will do extra, but my friend listening, I did not say it was fair. I did not say it was going
That's
to be
right.
easy. I'm saying if you are a human being who are attuned to the needs of other human beings, you will do it and understand that it's not going to be fair and it will not be easy. And that's why we need to support leaders who are coming in, who grasp this, who will give support to those teachers so it won't be as much of a emotional, psychological, and even financial drain upon them.
That's true. Let's try to get another caller in here before we have to end the hour. This has been interesting. 410-319-8888. And Aaron, you're on the air.
Hey, what's going on there, Mark?
How are you, Aaron? Welcome.
I'm doing well. I'm not going to be long. I'm curator over at the museum here at.
Aaron, how you doing, man? Good to hear from you.
I'm doing well,
good,
Mark.
Good.
Yeah, so I'll be really brief. It's funny that you're talking about this today because literally before I got into my car, I was having a conversation with my coworker about a book that I picked up yesterday at the BMA that talks about this program in the South Bronx where this artist teacher, Tim Rollins, worked with these groups, that group of kids who were considered problem kids, and he was able to turn them around. Where, you know, these kids would all graduate, they would raise their test scores in reading and math, and they also turned out to be incredible artists. And he would find a way to incorporate both math and literature, reading and writing, everything into the arts. And it was just such an incredible model, I thought, that teachers, regardless of their discipline, could use to sort of infuse both the left and right brain thinking. And then even a couple of weeks ago, I met with a mentor of mine, Freeman Hrabowski.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And so he and I were talking about the importance of, you know, he's a classical pianist.
He is an amazing
And he was talking about his Meyerhoff scholars and the high percentage of those scholars who are all engineers, you know, they go on to get graduate degrees or go on to medical school and science and engineering, et cetera. And, you know, like the high percentage of those students who are all classically trained musicians or they've studied music. And it's just amazing that, you know, some of us get the connection between math, science, art, and humanities. But at some point, we sort of left the arts and humanities behind and we just started focusing on just this, okay, we got to find a way to prepare our kids for tests, have them get jobs and, you know, and move into these other professions without thinking, well, what role does the humanities have in all of that? And so I wanted to mention all of that, but particularly this book, Tim Rollins and KOS, that I think could present a really interesting model that I think everyone who's dealing with kids should read.
Aaron, it's good to hear from you. Runs our museum right over here
at Morrissey
University campus.
Yes.
And Aaron, I owe you a phone call and a lunch, I think, don't I? Well, not buying it, but together with you anyway.
Aaron, make him buy it.
I beg your pardon.
Oh, yeah.
This has been a really. Are we out of time? We have another caller time? Or yes, no, up, down?
All right. We have to do it again.
The boss says no across
there
the glass.
You go.
Oh. Man.
So
this
Mark,
this has to be a series.
It does.
It does.
We will do that then.
There you go.
Leah Gilmore. My dear friends, Donald Hicken, College and Gala, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And all of you for calling in and making the show what it is and bringing these conversations on the air during the course of this hour. This is a really critically important subject that we will come back to because we need arts in our schools and lives. And if all the kids who go to private schools can have arts, athletics, and academics in the course of an 8 to 5 in the afternoon so can our children in public schools.
Everybody go hug a teacher.
See you next month, Mark.
We're going to take a very brief break and come right back. We have a three-part next hour that takes us to Cuba, Madison, and Libya. So stay with us for that. Information is right there. We'll be right back. Stay with us.